Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give artists and filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their film funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. Our winter 2021 narrative and documentary contests are now open, so check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one sentence pitch for a chance to win up to $10,000 to make your film. And we want to remind listeners that contests do happen regularly, so if you are listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today, we have Jamie Monahan on the podcast. Jamie's an award-winning filmmaker, director, producer, and actress, and her latest project, Legacy, was a finalist for the Sundance 2020 Episodic Makers Lab. Jamie, thank you so much for coming. Could you give us a bit more info about you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Like you said, I'm an award-winning female filmmaker. I am an actor, writer, director, producer, casting director, casting assistant. I've worn many hats through many years. And yeah, my short film, Lucid, that was the first project of my own that I wrote and directed. That got accepted or licensed by Dust. So Dust is a sci-fi platform, and it's been viewed over 300,000 times now.
That's awesome.
And yeah, across platforms. So it's on Roku and Facebook and Instagram. So that's been really exciting. And then Legacy, like you said, got accepted into the Sundance program, or was a finalist for the Sundance program. And then Lucid this summer got accepted into the Sundance Collabs TV writing program. So we were working on developing Lucid into a full-length pilot episode versus the short that I did for festivals. And it was a proof of concept. So it was a proof of concept that was short enough for a short film and to submit to short film festivals.
Mm, very cool. So with all those films, what were some of the challenges that you faced while making them?
So many. let's see. For Lucid, it was just my first project. So I think there's always going to be a surprise or a hiccup. And I think if you can go on set just knowing that something will happen, then you're going to have more success. And for me, I think the best people to work with are people who don't only think of plan A and plan B, but could go all the way to, like, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, A, like the whole thing. They have all the options and possibilities in their back of their mind at all times. And being flexible. So for Legacy, that was the project I filmed two summers ago. We had an entire shoot outside, and we had all these extras show up, and it rained. It was like raining. Oh, no. All of our stuff was supposed to be outside that day. And I was like, how can we change all these shots that I wanted? And it was mostly B-roll, but very important B-roll for the project. So how can we change all of our outdoor shots to indoor shots? And what were we trying to tell visually that we could switch indoors and still keep, like, what was important of the story? So that was a challenge, but it worked out really well, and everyone was super flexible. And we even had, like, a PA on weather duty. So if there was a moment of sunshine or a second where, you know, the clouds cleared, we were outside filming whatever needed to be filmed outside. So
did you have the locations already that you switched to inside for their shots?
We were basing our, like, our home base was out of my parents' house. So that was where, like, holding was, and that's where we were kind of like, that's where we were, at my parents' house. So I was just like, okay, I guess we're going to find different places in my parents' house to make this look interesting and exciting, and we can film different rooms and try to, like, make it work. So it worked out.
It's always that's awesome. It's always helpful to have family that's supportive. I shot a previous film of mine, Son of Blackbeard, a good portion of it at my aunt and uncle's house, and we were, I think we removed some of their doors to get equipment through. We were putting lights on their roof, and they were, I don't think they know what they got into at first, but it's always so helpful to have family that's supportive for sure.
So helpful.
Yeah. What is a little random, but I'm reading here that you were on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Can you tell
me a little bit about that? What was that like? Yes.
So I've actually gotten to be on this show a couple of times as a, just usually like an extra or in some of the sketches. So I was in a dancer for the Hamilton mixtape. And then they performed Rise Up live. So Busta Rhymes, Joel Ortiz, and I forget the other rapper, but all three of them were there, and we did like a whole choreographed dance. It was pretty incredible, and that was live. I also did, there was a country music star that he was doing, it's the Gyro Giro. Jimmy Fallon's trying to figure out how to say Giro or Gyro or Giro, however you say it. It's that music video. And I'm like just a character in that one. Yeah, that was just awesome. Random. I don't even remember how I got that. But once I worked with them once, it was pretty, you know, as long as you're a good human, people usually want to work with you again. So
And you don't remember how you got on the show?
I feel like I auditioned at some point, but I had worked with them before doing the Hamilton mixtape. So they knew, you know, that the basic, I mean, so many things about being a great actor don't have to do with your acting ability. It's about showing up on time. Are you prepared? Are you a good human? Are you someone that people want to spend 12 to 16 hours with on set? You know, like, just being prepared is such a huge aspect of being a good actor. And then if you're talented, that's even better. Like icing.
So, talking about talent and your films that have done pretty well, tell me about your experiences on this festival circuit. What have you found to be most challenging about navigating festivals? And
festivals are hard, I think. And knowing where your show is going to fit in a festival is really difficult to know, or who your audience is. I mean, I had a good idea that, you know, people who like sci-fi would like Lucid, but the festivals that it got into were a surprise, you know, or like how well it did in certain places versus others. I mean, it's tough submitting to festivals because you get a lot of rejection. And what I think with Lucid, I aimed really high. So I had like, you know, the top five big ones, which there's no way. But yeah, I think you should always just like try it, because you never know how, like, if something you made really resonates with a festival or the programmers. So I had some big high reach festivals, and then I had some like mid-level festivals, and then I had some like kind of lower bar festivals that I felt like I could definitely get into. But even there were some festivals where friends were working and they were like, hey, make sure to submit your film, and you submit it and they're like, oh, we're going with something else. So there's really no guarantee, and it's
expensive.
It's very expensive. I think we spent, I think with Lucid, it was like close to $1,000, maybe more for festival submission. So that was, for me, that was something I hadn't thought of. I didn't put that into my budget either, which is for all filmmakers, I think budgeting what your festival campaign looks like and like how much money you plan on submitting and where you plan to submit. And then it's interesting because as audience, like your viewers and your fans are going to get excited about the first few festivals you get into. And then it's going to be hard to get them to keep watching it or to keep attending things. So the first few things we got into, everyone was like super excited, sharing it. attending in person, voting it for, you know, whatever. And then when it got on dust, I reached out to everyone again. And I'm like, please watch it. Please like it. Please comment. You know, all the things that are important, unfortunately. And people were like, but I already saw it. So, <Yeah. laughs> you know, like I saw it in person. Like, I don't need to watch it on YouTube because I saw it in person. And that's something to think about long term. Like, if you're planning on doing distribution, if you burn out your audience early with lots of festivals, and then the video becomes like a video on demand and it's $1.50 or $2, are people going to want to pay that if they've already seen it for free? Or seen it at a festival?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So, especially if it's a short.
Yeah, a short, yeah. And that's something you don't really learn until you do it. And then you're like, this is... I do think it, one thing I did, the festivals I didn't get into, not all of them, but the festivals I wanted to get into and didn't, I looked at the programming that I would have been in that block. And that was really informative to see, like, I wouldn't call them my competition, but just to see what, you know, what either the program's looking for specifically in the realm of like sci-fi shorts. Like I went to see Tribeca's sci-fi short block and it was insane. Like one of the films alone, I think spent $500,000 on a short and and their sci-fi effects were on the level of Star Wars.
That's
so
insane.
Yeah, there was, and it was
that
encouraging.
By, like, a big studio or?
No, it wasn't. It was just like this, it was a guy who really loved sci-fi and his daughter wanted to be an actress, so he made a sci-fi short film for her.
Gotcha. So. $500,000 on a short film. That is crazy.
It is crazy. It makes no sense to me. I mean, that is clearly a passion project.
Yeah. What, other than that big, you know, high budget film, what were some takeaways you had from looking at that block of shorts from festivals you didn't get into? Because that's an interesting strategy, I think.
Well, I think one of the things I realized is how tricky it is with festival programming because it changes every year. So at Tribeca that year, they had a specific block for, like, I wouldn't, like, films about gun violence or kind of like anti-guns, or just guns in general. There was like a whole block for films about guns. And I thought that was interesting because what if you had made a film about anti-guns or gun violence or something like that, but you had made it the year before and you submitted and you didn't get in, but then now this year, that's something that's on the festival's mind and now they have a whole block for it, but you didn't submit. So it's very like, and then if you went to the festival and you're like, oh, they have a whole block for this, so next year when I submit my film, it will get in. Well, next year they decide to move on from that topic and they have something else that's important. So it's kind of like the lottery. You really, it's tough to plan for, but I do think if you have a mix of festivals and mix of festival levels, that that's really helpful. And also to really ask other filmmakers, you know, which films, festivals did you really like? Because there are definitely festivals that support filmmakers and are very like filmmaker, I don't know, like they cater to you. They're very helpful. They help you advertise and like get stuff out there. And then there are some that I think are a little more of kind of like a business. you know, you're like on
like
your own.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely experienced that. Some you feel kind of like you're part of the family and they're so excited to have you there. And then other times it's just like, oh, here's your badge.
Yeah.
This is your screening time. Yep. That one festival, I won't say which it was. They actually, the winners, I think, had to pay to receive their like awards. It was crazy. Like they got a little certificate, but if they actually wanted like the trophy or the, you know, little award thing, they had to like mail away for it and pay for it. I thought that was just kind of insulting.
Yeah, that happened.
I won't be going back to the festival.
That happened to me, and there was another festival where they wanted you to pay to come to the award ceremony. Mm. And if you're nominated, you're like, well, I don't want to like not be there if I win. Exactly. So that's kind of tough. And I understand like festival are expensive and there's a lot of advertising and like stuff that festivals are covering. But from a filmmaker's side, it can be very expensive to just attend a festival.
Yep. You know, especially if it's not local, you have to fly.
Yeah, and especially. That was like, so Lucid didn't get into the Holly Shorts Film Festival, but we did get into their monthly screening program, and they were screening at the Chinese Theater. But I live in New York, so that's a plane ticket to go to LA. That's, you know, advertising plus, you know, trying to get friends and family and everyone to come, and it's just... It's a lot, and whatever you're going to wear. Yeah. And guys, I feel like, are so lucky because you could get like one nice suit and then just like wear it over and over again. Whereas girls, like, you get photographed in a dress, you got to get a different dress or a different outfit.
Right.
yeah. So it was that was a big investment that ended up being a really cool experience, but price of like what you have to pay to get there. I'm sure so many filmmakers maybe wouldn't want to spend that much money. Oh, and we had to change the formatting too, to format, because we had formatted for like festivals, and this was now needed to be formatted for, you know, the big screen in a movie theater.
So. Right. Oh, so did you need a DCP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's
and a rushed one. So like,
wow.
You know, more expensive.
I'm blanking on what that actually stands for right now. I see the acronym all the time. Digital cinema. I'm gonna look it up because we can't talk about this and people are gonna be listening and be like, what's a DCP? The Informative Film Fund Podcast. Yeah, okay, I was right. Digital cinema package. Cool.
Yes, that's
so
correct.
That's something you prepare for theatrical screenings. Just for everyone out there who is curious. So that's all super helpful. And yet, and that's not even navigating the festival circuit in COVID. I mean, we had, the guys from Sunday Dinner on a while back, and they had to do their entire festival circuit online and remote. And it's just crazy. And, you know, so that adds another whole layer of complexity to things. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
I even think it would be harder because the amount of advertising that you would need to do in order to get people who are experiencing high levels of Zoom fatigue to watch, to write reviews, to get press. And I mean, it would be a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely difficult. And hopefully with these vaccines and everything, we can see in-person festivals come back.
I am in the so near future. In-person.
I know. I hate all these Zoom calls. I mean, it's great we're able to do this podcast and everything, but I'm definitely suffering from Zoom fatigue for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to your guest blog for the Film Fund, I think that was about how to do pre-production during a pandemic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, working on pre-production and kind of what you can do during this crazy downtime. And what's interesting, I would say that one of my advice... Well, I had kind of mentioned that, like, planning your fundraising campaign and what that would look like. And I've been curious. I haven't fundraised, but I've been curious to see, like, how generous are artists in general right now when so many artists are unemployed. But I've seen so many successful fundraising campaigns. I think people... know how much the arts are suffering and they really want to contribute or help in any way that they can. And I think if you can tap into that element of, you know, I know you're binge watching all the TV shows. Where do you think they come from? Like, please support artists, you know, right now. And I've seen a lot of people have successful campaigns even during the pandemic. And I wasn't sure that it would be successful. So that's something I definitely think has changed you know, with how long it's gone on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And I've talked to people too and say, yeah, you know, the film industry was hit really hard. And they've said, oh, I can see that. All the shows on demand, there's nothing really new there to watch. This is, you know, when it first kind of happened. So yeah, I think that definitely resonates with people. What drew you to the Film Fund at first? I was so excited that you reached out and wanted to do a guest blog, but how did you get on our radar?
I actually submitted one of my projects to the contest, and I just loved the idea that, because it's so difficult, like fundraising in general is, depending on how much you're fundraising and all this stuff. Mm. And even with contests, I feel like there's a lot of red tape, or, mm. you know, I submitted to a bunch of things for that would have happened in 2020, which kind of worked out that I didn't get it. Like the HBO Female Directors Program and the NBC Access, I think that's what it's called. But those programs require, the NBC Female Forward Program, they require a lot of essays and letters of recommendation and stuff like that. And that is awesome and that is great. But I think we need more things that make it easier for people to actually apply to.
Yeah.
Because when it's so difficult to do all that stuff, I think it prevents people from doing it. And I think, you know, I think it also makes I don't think it makes it easy for all of diversity or all minorities to submit to projects when they're that complicated. You know, so when it's easier and when it's something that everyone can do and it feels very accessible and very simple, I think that to me is what stuck out about what you guys are doing, because it's actually helpful. So.
Yeah, I'm so glad you find that helpful, because that's one thing we pride ourselves on, is the simplicity of entering. You know, it's not a grant application where you need to write 20 pages about the, like, why your film is important to the humanities or something like crazy like that, which I've done. And it's just like, we're trying to make a film here. Just like, this is what it's about. And it's a really good film. This is how we'll use some of the funding. And that's kind of all we care about. We don't ask about what your background is. We don't ask what your name is. Or we do ask you for your name, but we don't judge anything based on that. In the judging process, it's all blind. And we're really proud that we've been able to have diversity through that too. It just kind of proves that we care about the stories, and these stories are important to tell. And that's what our judges look at, and it's worked out so far. And I'm super excited to see what the projects are in the future. Yeah. What are you currently working on?
So I'm in post-production for a project called Legacy, which again is like a proof of concept for a series, but it's also a short film. It's kind of like my MO, I guess. And it's about a group. It's a group of sorority vigilantes who kill bad men and eat them to get rid of their bodies.
Okay. So is that a horror film, you said?
I would say that it's like a crime thriller. It's very Dexter meets a sorority house.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. How did you come up with that concept?
I was a sorority girl in college, and I always felt like I was half a sorority girl and half not a sorority girl. Mm-hmm. Because it's very, I mean, at least the sorority that I was in, it was all pink, super, super girly.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And also, when I was in high school, I didn't really like girls. I have a brother, so I hung out with, like, a lot of guys. I always felt like it was easier and less competitive hanging out with guys. And girls could be really catty. And so then I joined, like, a sorority of 75 girls that are, like, the girliest girls. So part of me loved it, and then part of me was like, this is not me. But sorority life, I mean, it's really complicated, and there's all these kind of inner dynamics, and there's a lot of ritual involved. I was kind of interested in, you know, learning the history of sorority and fraternity, like ancient rituals and stuff like that. Because some of them, I mean, you can do some research, and some of them are like really crazy And then hazing was a big issue when I was in college, and my college had no hazing and very strong anti-hazing. But we watched, you know, the anti-hazing videos and saw how intense hazing was on other campuses and stuff like that. So sorority culture in general, I don't think has been done well on TV. And then I also like the idea of a female anti-hero, you know, someone who is kind of thrust in a difficult situation, which is our lead. She joins the sorority and has no idea what they do. But then is torn because the men that are being killed are bad men. And justice is not being served for those men. So the women take it into their own hands. And that's the part where it gets a little, I would say, thriller more than horror. There are probably moments that are scary. Guys will probably think they're scary.
I would think so. What are some interesting things you've had to navigate doing it in COVID, in post?
Well, luckily post, I feel like, is pretty easy. Other than, because now, you know, you could screen share with an editor. I mean, I feel like it's a lot easier doing post. Filming, I think, would be pretty difficult. But post has been pretty good. I think the biggest struggle for me has been deciding when to finish post-production, because I could have finished during 2019 and submitted it to festivals for, I guess, yeah, I could have rushed it and finished it to submit to festivals for 2020. And now I'm, you know, very glad that I did not do that. But the question then was, do I finish it in 2020 and have it release in 2021, or do I wait for 2022? And I decided that I'm going to wait to 2022 because I think there's going to be a gap in programming because not very many people filmed in COVID. I know a couple of people who did, but most people did not. And even with entertainment, it's going to be interesting to see when that gap of programming happens with all of our TV shows. Like, everything that was supposed to be filming in 2020 got pushed back. Even if it was just like 6 months, I think people are going to realize, we're going to feel that, which might be great for filmmakers because there'll be more, I'm hoping there's a greater need for independent content.
Yeah, there might be an opportunity there for some scrappy filmmakers to create some awesome films instead of the
Or if someone like was in post-production for a feature, that would be like the sweet spot, because I feel like, you know, maybe streaming platforms would be more open to picking up more indie features because they don't have the features that they need right now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What's aside from waiting to finish post maybe and fulfilling that sweet spot, what's some advice you would give to filmmakers?
I think one of the things that I've heard from a lot of like students and just people in general is feeling like we lost a year. But I wouldn't think of it that way, because even a lot of people I know took the time to write or develop other skill sets that they have. A lot of people just watched. I mean, if all you did was sit at home and watch a bunch of TV shows, a bunch of movies, that is education in and of itself. Like, that's not lost just because you spent a year of watching TV and entertainment, you know? So I think just trying to shift from that mindset of like, we wasted a year or we lost a year, and think of it as maybe a recovery year because in our industry, I feel like it's always constantly running on a treadmill and, you know, you're hustling so hard, and this was kind of like a forced break for everyone. So I think we're going to see a lot of good things come from that and a lot of really good art, because even if you weren't writing and you were just observing and just watching a bunch of TV, I think your art is going to be better moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I don't anymore, but I used to watch two movies every night, and it was just so helpful, you know. And they weren't always, you know, critically acclaimed Criterion films. Sometimes they were, you know, silly or whatever, but just watching content helps.
Yeah, exactly. And even like the fluff stuff, you know, like the cotton candy TV or laundry TV, all that stuff is important because people are watching it. It's sellable and people are interested in that kind of content. So even if you don't want to create it, if you can understand why people are interested in it or why people continue to go back to it, that's like, that's huge. And you can use that in whatever you create.
Absolutely. You know, and you can help train your ear for dialogue and just storytelling in general, looking at different kinds of narratives. And it's, I think everything you watch is helpful in some way, even if it's something really objectively terrible. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to make that mistake. So yeah, I think it's always helpful to absorb things, and it's been a great year to do that, even though it's been also challenging. Well, Jamie, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning. Well, is it going to be morning when I release this? Well, we're recording it in the morning now. So we have our current Film Fund contest currently open. I want to thank everyone for tuning into the podcast and remind you that our winter 2021 narrative and documentary contests are now open. So check out thefilmfund.co to submit your entry. Remind I have our digital producer, Tom, write these scripts, and he always writes, remind them to check our social channels, and I always read it as that. So I'm reminding everyone to check out the social channels, and some of our prizes include $10,000, up to $10,000 in cash to make your film, prizes like Kitsplit gift cards and Adobe Creative Cloud subscriptions. Also, check out the website for the most up-to-date information. Remember, our blog is filled with amazing filmmaking and producing tips like Jamie Monahan's How to Do Pre-Production During a Pandemic blog, so check that out. Sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social to stay up-to-date on what's happening at the Film Fund. I want to thank everyone for listening or watching if you're watching our video feed. Jamie, do you have anything else you want to talk about in the future? Anything coming up?
Well, keep an eye out for Legacy eventually. It will be out there probably in 2022.
Awesome. Everyone, check out Legacy, check out the Film Fund, and tune in every Friday for new episodes. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later.
Thanks.